Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Today, we're re-airing two of our favorite recent conversations. Later, you'll hear my talk. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Today, we're re-airing two of our favorite recent conversations. Later, you'll hear my talk with Illinois-based disability activist Melissa Blake. But first, a conversation from last month, shortly before the election, about some of the labels used to describe Latino or Latinx or Hispanic identity. Because this conversation is pre-recorded, you can't call in now, but we would still love to hear what you thought about what we talked about on the show today. You send us an email to talk@21stshow.org, or better yet, leave a voicemail at 217-300-2121. We might just play it on air. Again, the number 217-300-2121. Here's that conversation. Decades ago, people in the U.S. who traced their roots to Spain, Central America, South America, and parts of the Caribbean were grouped together using the word Hispanic. More recently, Latino and Latina have become the more prominent labels to describe that population. But in recent years, Latinx has been introduced as a gender-neutral label for the Latino and Hispanic communities. Its use has been growing in universities and by media organizations. Nevertheless, a recent study from the Pew Research Center found just about 1 in 4 Hispanics in the U.S. have even heard of the word Latinx, and just 3% use it to describe themselves. Today, we'll talk about the origins and usage of Hispanic, Latino, and Latinx. Joining us to talk about this are Professor Christina Abreu, history professor at Northern Illinois University and director of the Center for Latino and Latin American Studies there. Hello, Christina. Welcome to the 21st.
Hi. Thanks for having me this morning.
Well, thanks for being here. We're also joined by Mark Hugo Lopez, who's director of global migration and demography research at the Pew Research Center. Mark, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And we have Roy Heima, a student at UIUC. Roy, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being on with us.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So before we begin talking about the usage of Latinx within the Hispanic and Latino communities, Professor Abreu, can you tell us about the history behind the words Hispanic and Latino? What's the difference between the two, and when did they first come to be used in the U.S.?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. When I teach Latino studies to my students, one of the first things I let them know is there's no neat answer for any of that's a hard question. It's very messy to talk about the origins and of these different terms, right? These are labels, and labels are often very contested. The earliest usage in the United States of the term Hispanic, it's often traced to the late 1960s, 1970s under the Nixon administration as a term to encompass individuals of Latin American descent in the United States. That term first appeared in the U.S. Census in 1980. Later on, however, there was some, within the Hispanic community, right, there was some disagreement about that term because it tended to center Spain and Spanish. And so as the community in the United States, grew over time, the centrality or the primacy of Spanish became less the central identifiable factor of the community. And so from within the community, the term Latino emerged and became adopted and is oftentimes used interchangeably. So a lot of times on forms, in writing, sometimes you'll see that those two terms used interchangeably. The earliest usage of the term Latinx, we don't know the exact origins, but it earliest was traced back to 2004 in a publication about Puerto Ricans in the United States. But it became much more common, much more prevalent after the Pulse shooting in at the Pulse nightclub shooting in 2016, when it became much more prevalent, particularly in U.S. newspapers and in academic settings.
Okay, well, I want to come back to Latinx in a minute, but if we can linger on, because I'm a bit of a word nerd, on the sort of etymology of Hispanic. I mean, can you talk about, you know, where that phrase comes from? I think I presume it's tied to the island of Hispaniola in the Caribbean, which is where the first Spanish colonies were. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. I mean, the term, you know, in my own research, I see it coming up in, you know, as far back as the late 18th, 19th century, when you would see in newspapers, you'd see the term Hispano, right? And it all linking back to Spain, right? And so that then gets modified into English and becomes Hispanic. And so that term, you know, is often preferred by many for quite some time. I know there's a the invention of that term is also written about. There's a sociologist, Cristina Mora, who writes about that that term getting constructed in the mid 20th century.
And what about the term Latino? I mean, maybe that seems self-evident given, you know, Latin America is what we in the U.S. at least use to refer to, you know, much of the southern part, well, pretty much most of the country south of the U.S. in this hemisphere. But can you talk about the origins of Latino as a sort of the dominant phrase for following Hispanic?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a way that the term it's oftentimes referred to as more of a sort of a grassroots or community term, a way to sort of decenter Spain and center Latin America and the Caribbean and find sort of call attention to the similar or the shared history, the shared paths of these Latin American and Caribbean countries moving away from their colonial past and ties to Spain.
And it is there, if you go to countries in Central America, in South America, in the Caribbean, do people think of themselves as Latino or Latina? Is there a sort of pan-Latin identity in those countries? Or is this something that mostly people in the U.S. use for because we love to categorize things?
Yeah, you know, that's a really, you know, I hesitate to generalize it in that sort of way, but what I would say is even within the United States, you have individuals who resist, right, these collective terms, right? Terms like Hispanic, Latino, Latinx, they're useful to an extent, right? They're useful for helping to build solidarity among groups, different ethnic groups, right? So among Puerto Ricans, Mexican Americans, Cuban Americans, Central Americans, etc. But even if you talk to individuals from these different ethnic groups, right, from these different national origins groups, some are resistant to these terms, right, and say, no, you know, I'm not Latina, I'm Chicana, I'm not, you know, Latinx, I'm Cuban American, and so I think. These are contested terms that you know, how you identify will also vary depending on the particular setting, right? So maybe at school I'm Latina, but at home we're Cuban American or whatnot, right? So I think they vary over context as well.
Interesting. And so you talked a little bit ago about the, you know, where the uses of Latinx first start showing up in, you know, on LexisNexis, the, you know, the media where you can search back, you know, the first appearances of words. Is there a parent of this word? Do we know it? Is this something that somebody invented, or is this sort of a grassroots thing as best as we can tell as well?
You know, to be honest, I don't know the exact origins of Latinx. I know that it first started appearing, you know, in the early 2000s. Okay. There, we didn't go right from Latino to Latinx. There were other attempts in between to kind of solve or to be more gender inclusive, right? To kind of deal with the language binary that Spanish, right, forces us into, right? So, you know, a lot, my center, for example, is a center for Latino, right, and Latin American studies. There are other, units at other institutions that are centers or programs for Latino and Latina, right? So sometimes you'll see the O height, O slash A or A slash O. For a little while there was the at symbol. So it was Latin and then the at symbol to kind of deal with or to be more gender inclusive, right? More mindful of the LGBTQ community. And so, you know, it's contested. There's not a neat, I don't think there's not a neat origin story. And it's likely that, you know, Latinx will not be the last term that is created to you know, unify or create a collective community.
Yeah. All right, listeners, if you're just tuning in, I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about the evolution of the group identity term Latinx from started as Hispanic in America, evolved into Latino and Latina. Some are now advocating for more widespread use of Latinx. We're speaking with Professor Christina Abreu, who's director of the Center for Latino and Latin American Studies at Northern Illinois University. In a bit, we're going to hear from Roy Jaima, who's a student at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. And now I want to ask Mark Hugo Lopez, who's director of Global Migration and Demography Research at Pew, about a recent study on this. One of the questions they looked at is the awareness of this idea of Latinx and who is. So, Mark, based on your findings, how widespread is the awareness of this word? Who is most likely to have heard of or use Latinx?
So we did a survey of adults who say they're either Hispanic or Latino or trace their roots and ancestry to Latin America or to Spain. And when you take a look at this population and you ask them, have you heard of the term Latinx? We found that 23% say yes, they have, but 76% have not. That's a pretty large number in terms of the share that haven't heard of this. And I want to stress that this is not an evaluation of is Latinx good or bad, or is it something that the community wants or doesn't want, but it's just have people heard of the term. We then went on to ask whether or not people use the term to describe themselves. And overall, just 3% of the U.S. Latino adult population says they use Latinx to describe themselves. Now, who is aware of this term? Who has heard of it? And there actually are some very interesting patterns here. First, it tends to be younger people, people ages 18 to 29, for example, also tend to be more U.S. born, more English speaker, and also tend to be college educated or have some college experience and tend to lean more towards the Democratic Party than the Republican Party. So those are some of the characteristics of those who've heard of the term. Those who haven't heard of the term tend to be more likely to be foreign born, Spanish speakers, not have any college experience, and not so Democrat-leaning as the group that's heard of the term. Interestingly, one of the groups that tends to use the term Latinx itself to describe its identity is young Hispanic women, ages 18 to 29. Among them, 14% say they use the term to describe themselves. So this is an interesting pattern, because as we've been tracking use of pan-ethnic terms among this population over the years, we found that for the most part, Hispanic and Latino are generally terms that people don't use to describe their identity. It's really their country of origin, which is what most people use. And when you ask about whether it should be Hispanic, Latino, or Latinx to describe the population, 61% in our survey from December said that Hispanic was a term they preferred to describe the population. About another 30% or so said Latino, and just 4% said Latinx. So when you see the Latinx term compared to other terms in terms of use to describe the population, Hispanic by far is the most popular term. And I think that's important to note, because these three terms are still being used today, Hispanic and Latino along with Latinx, to describe a population that's quite diverse and in a number of ways. And that also includes many who are immigrants from other parts of Latin America who may not necessarily have even heard of many of these pan-ethnic terms to begin with.
Yeah. Roy, I wonder, as somebody who identifies as Latinx, are you surprised at Pew's findings that so many people are not aware or don't prefer to use this term?
I'm not necessarily surprised, but I also do think that, like, it just maybe depends, like you said, like the younger generation starts using, like, you know, Latinx. Older people are used to terms Hispanic or Latino because they were boxed in those terms, so they just, you know, went with what they were called, so they kept that term, I guess. But yeah, it's a bit not surprising, but it is a bit, I wish it could be more inclusive, you know, like, yeah. I feel like a lot of people I know, they actually don't like the word Hispanic because it traces back to the colonizer, so that did surprise me a little. So usually a lot of the most of the people I know, they identify as Latino or Latina rather than Hispanic.
All right, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just tuning in, we're revisiting one of our favorite recent conversations on the evolution of the word Latinx, its origins, and its suggested adoption for the population that until recently, or even still, is mostly known as Latino, Latina, and even Hispanic, depending on who's doing the categorization. We're speaking with Christina Abreu, Associate Professor of History and Director of the Center for Latino and Latin American Studies at Northern Illinois University. Also, Mark Hugo Lopez, Director of Global Migration and Demography Research at Pew Research Center. And Roy Haima, a student at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Here is the second and final part of that conversation. Roy, I want to ask, how did you come to adopt this term? What does it mean to you to identify as Latinx?
Well, I first got introduced to the term Latinx in high school. And when I first heard it, I mean, I was like 17. So as someone who is part of the LGBTQ plus community, I saw it as a step towards like inclusivity and just, you know, just as a person in general, just I feel like even if I wasn't part of the LGBTQ community, I think it's also a really good way to just acknowledge that the Latinx population is extremely diverse. And I feel like it serves as an umbrella term, you know, that to bring, it serves as an umbrella term, and that way there's no erasure of any Latinx. So yeah, also another thing is I identify as, well, I am non-binary. So I also feel like this was a really good term for that, because at the time I hadn't come to terms with my identity as someone who is non-binary. But I was at like a very early stage of my journey towards self-discovery. So back then I identified as gay, but most of the time I always found myself not really liking that term. So when I came to terms with being non-binary, pansexual, that term really made even more sense to me. I just feel like I never truly considered myself a boy. So I like the term Latinx ever since then, because it stripped that assumption from society that just because I am cis assumed and male assumed does not mean that I am cisgender or a male.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, Ro, how, as somebody, when you're speaking Spanish, it's such a gendered language, right? Adjectives, even nouns have genders in Spanish. How do you navigate speaking in a gendered language?
Well, I just, you know, I feel like Spanish is a colonizer language. So it's not really surprising, to say the least. It's not really our language. Like back in Mexico, you know, when indigenous folk were there, the Spanish was not something that was spoken. The gender binary was something that wasn't introduced. It's just, you know, one of these things that I just, Spanish was kind of just given to me the same way English was given to me. So I really didn't question much. But what I do say is that Spanish is a gender language, but it's up to us whether we want to continue to have this gender binary deeply rooted within the language. Like, for example, because of Latinx, I started replacing the A and the O at the end of certain words in Spanish with an X to continue being inclusive of all genders, to remove the gender binary that is, you know, rooted in Spanish. And I mostly do this when I'm referring to other non-binary folk, you know, like, for example, like, instead of saying, like, pretty in Spanish would be bonita for a girl, bonito for a guy, I would just say, like, bonitex, like Latinx. So, yeah. You know, I do that. I don't do it as much as I would like myself to do, so I'm working on that. But, yeah, I feel like it's only going to be very gendered if we continue to do that. Like, for example, like right now we're talking about Hispanic, Latino, when we could easily be saying, you know, Latinx. And I think that covers Latinas, Latinos, and anyone who doesn't identify within the gender binary.
Yeah, interesting. We're going to go to the phones now. Line 4, Oscar in Springfield. Welcome to the 21st. Thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you. Your gentleman there, or excuse me, my apologies. The individual there does make some valid points, and I really appreciate his viewpoint. I will tell you that as a second-generation immigrant from Latin America who identified as Hispanic, imagine unpacking all of that, with an extended family still in Central America that is in the LGB community, at least a dozen of my relatives down there, I will tell you that in the languages of the Hispanic culture, the Latin culture, Latino covers the group, and it is peculiar to me that the English-speaking colonizer language, if you'll follow the lead of the other individuals, the colonizer languages are now putting a divisiveness into the organic languages that is, you know, misplaced. Okay, we don't need to be redefining other languages in order to make ourselves feel more comfortable in this situation. It's my opinion, obviously. And, you know, we talk about colonizer languages. Well, guess what? All of the Romance languages, Italian, French, all have gender specifics. Are we going to start changing all of those languages as well? Or are we going to go back to the basis of the languages of antiquity of Central America, South America?
And Oscar, how do you identify yourself then in terms of your ethnic heritage?
My ethnic heritage is I am Hispanic because my family emigrated to Mexico and stayed very close-knit within the Spanish society down there. There was some mixing, obviously, throughout the generations with Latins and other island folks and Portuguese and other folks that emigrated to Central America and Mexico. As a consequence, you know, I tie back to the, you know, my grandmother emigrated to the United States, and I am a second generation in the United States from my grandmother moving up here with my grandfather, who actually went to Mexico as a U.S. citizen and found a lovely young woman, and they married and had 5 beautiful children, my uncle and aunts. And pretty much all the grandchildren, we all speak English as our primary language, and most of us have picked up Spanish, classical Spanish, obviously, because that's what my grandmother was taught. We didn't learn the border Spanish, we didn't learn the gutter Spanish, if you will, the various other dialects of Spanish.
All right, Oscar, I want to thank. Just want to thank you for calling in today. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening and calling in. So, Mark, I guess I want to ask you, when you were doing the survey for Pew, you asked respondents what Latinx meant to Hispanics, and some expressed dislike or disagreement with the term, as we just heard from Oscar on the phone there. Can you share some of the reasons that respondents gave as to why they disliked Latinx?
So as you noted, we did do a follow-up of those who said they've heard of the term, what the term means to them. And in their own words, what does it mean? I want to say that the first most common answer is, and 42% said this, it's a gender-neutral term for them. But there were, as you noted, some who had a reaction to the term Latinx and who said something like, for example, that it's a term of colonization. It's a way in which English speakers are colonizing a language like Spanish. Others said that it just doesn't work in Spanish. How do you pronounce something with an X at the end of a word? Because X is not actually a very commonly used letter in the Spanish language. But I want to say that one other thing that I think that's interesting about this is that we're talking about the United States, Latinx in the United States, and even a movement to be more gender inclusive in language in the United States. But that's not a uniquely American movement. There's a movement around the world to change language in many different ways to make it more gender inclusive. And in Latin America, an alternative of Latinx has actually emerged, which is Latin E. So imagine you have an E at the end as opposed to an X. And instead of saying words like todo and todas, which is the masculine and feminine versions of those words, you say todes. So you can actually pronounce a lot of Spanish words without necessarily making these words gendered. Other countries beyond the Romance languages are also seeing people introduce new language to be more gender inclusive. Like in India, for example, you see it happening there too. So this broader sense of wanting to change language, I think, is part of a broader international movement to be more inclusive and to give more recognition and options to people to identify how they want to be identified by others.
I want to add now into our conversation Leslie Hurtado, who's a reporter for a bilingual news outlet in English and Spanish in the Chicago suburbs. Leslie, thanks for joining us today on the 21st.
Thank you, Brian. It's nice to be here.
So, as I said, you're a reporter at a bilingual news outlet. It uses Latinx when it's reporting both in Spanish and English. Have you encountered Spanish-speaking readers who are unfamiliar with the term?
At the moment, no. We use the word Latinx. It's an all-encompassing term that is for non-binary Latinos, and it's just a way to include all readers. We have some young readers from the young generation who do use the word Latinx, and we do have readers that are unfamiliar with the word, and that is the older generation who do not understand how to pronounce the word, do not identify with the word. Instead, they prefer being called Latino, Latina, the feminine and masculine way to describe themselves. And so Latinx has also been adopted in newsrooms and the AP style as well. It says that the term Latinx, if the individual prefers to use Latinx, there has to be a description or why. But now, as you see, the term Latinx has been used widely in newsrooms, and there is no description. It's just an inclusive word that we use now. And at this moment, no one has been against the usage of this word.
Okay, I want to. We have one other caller on the line, Marianne in Peoria. Welcome to the 21st. Thanks for calling in. What's your question?
Well, I think it's pretty, been sort of touched on, if not wholly answered. I had heard the term Latine, which seems to me a lot more consonant with the language, as it was already mentioned that X sound is very harsh and disconsonant with the rest of the language, and Latine would be much easier to deal with people that actually speak the language. I don't even think the indigenous languages actually have an X sound. They have something similar, but it's not X. And also, X has a negative connotation in the sense of crossing out something or opposing something. So it is just kind of harsh and jarring. And I was wondering how widespread that Latine was and whether that was catching on more.
Okay, thanks, Marianne. Thanks for the call. Good question. And Professor Christina Abreu of the Center for Latino and Latin American Studies at Northern Illinois University, I'm going to ask you about this. And I got to say, personally, something was unlocked for me here. You hear a lot of, I think, native English speakers, particularly in the news media, who really lean into the X. They say Latin X, as opposed to Latinx, which to me has that does have a little more mellifluous sound to it and is more consonant with Latino and Latina, Latinx. It kind of flows a little more naturally. Can you talk about that and this idea of Latine? How would that even be spelled, Latina, I guess, with an E at the end?
Yeah, so I can talk a little bit about this in terms of the pronunciation and whatnot. The sort of cutesy little helpful hint for folks that I've seen circulate a lot is it Latinx, it rhymes with Kleenex. So if you can say Kleenex, you can say Latinx.
Yeah.
as much as I'd like to go with Latinx, we're not sort of superheroes, right? So we'll stick with Latinx. I have seen more recently the usage of Latine with an E at the end. I'm not entirely familiar. I'm not a language expert, right? So, sure. So I'm not entirely familiar with the origins of that term or how more widespread it is or it isn't. But what I can say is that, language is not static. Language evolves. Language is people use language, and language should evolve as people evolve, as society evolves, as culture evolves. And I think Latinx is a product of that evolution. And I think with any change, it changes hard. People have reactions to change, sometimes positive, sometimes negative. And I think that's what we see with Latinx. But I don't think that because it's hard or because it's uncomfortable, we should reject it, right? Or we should say, well, it doesn't sound right to us. It sounds right to the people who use it, and it sounds right to the people who feel included and welcomed and part of the community who use it. And so I think that's meaningful, and that's important, and should be respected and considered more so than putting the a sort of hierarchy of good Spanish versus bad Spanish, right? I think language should serve the people who use it.
And we need to wrap this conversation just really briefly, Roy. I just want to ask you in conclusion here, does in maybe just about 15 seconds, does what you've heard there, does it any of the callers or anything resonate with you? Or do you feel like, people need to get on board with Latinx and get over whatever hangups they might have because it makes people like yourself feel more included?
No, definitely. I feel like Latinx does make me feel more included. I think people can identify as whatever. It's just important to note that the Hispanic and Latino are not interchangeable. I just did want to note that.
Sure.
Hispanic is talking about language, and Latinx is talking about geography. And yeah, I did want to note that because I noticed it seemed like to some of us there was an idea that Hispanic and Latino are interchangeable, but it's really not.
Yeah. All right. Well, Roy, we need to leave it there. I want to thank you and all our other guests so much for joining us. Roy Haima is a student at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We've also been speaking with Christina Abreu, who's a professor of history and director of the Center for Latino and Latin American Studies at Northern Illinois University, Mark Hugo Lopez, director of global migration and demography research at Pew, and Leslie Hurtado, a reporter for a bilingual news outlet in the Chicago suburbs. Thank you all for being here on the 21st. More to come after a break.